Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
And now live in this studio, it's the All Paws Pet Talk call-in radio show with a valuable knowledge and expertise of our panel guests ready to take your calls. Listen for the phone number so you may call in live. Take it away, panel.
Hello, you're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with your host, Deb Wolf. And wow, there were baby gorillas born. Baby gorillas in the zoo in Israel. For some reason, they just have a knack for it there. And these gorillas are endangered and really, really under protection. And that zoo over there, like no other, just seems to keep turning out baby gorillas. So if you want to look, they knew one was pregnant. They didn't even know the other one was pregnant. Two babies were born in the last week. Baby gorillas. Adorable footage. So check it out online. Okay, everybody, we're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I love to share the baby gorilla news. You might not know this, but I once worked with baby gorillas. Baby gorillas are really, 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 really strong. So strong that they can break a human neck by accident. So there's all these rules about how you have to interact with baby gorillas. And it's really hard to obey the rules because they're adorable and playful. And they always want to wrestle with you and swing off you and do things that could break your neck. So it's a problem. But at this place, it looks like they're leaving the moms with the babes and the humans aren't nearly as involved in it. It just looks beautiful. So check it out. If you want to see something happy from the Middle East today, that's where to go. Okay, so today we have a guest we've never had before, and she's Dee, the doggy diva. Whoa, you're the doggy diva. I expect you to be dressed to the nines. Are you dressed to the nines, Dee?
I'll leave it up to your imagination if you can't see me.
I can't see you. Well, you're going to have to describe it. Are we talking like designer dog walking wear here?
Well, my company colors are pink and green, and even my male dog training staff have to sport the pink, so we'll just leave it at that.
I see. Okay.
But no, the doggy diva originated from a client of mine about 6 years ago that just kind of at the end of a session, he's like, you are the doggy diva. And I bet he wishes he could have royalties on the name now because I love it.
Yeah, it's a good name. Okay. So, and it gets hard to pick a name sometimes. Like I remember over the years, I've had several radio shows and each time I have to pick, well, this one, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, I didn't have to name, but my other shows, I always had to pick a name and you go search it and nope, there's something in Australia. Nope, there's a dog food company somewhere, you know, and
right.
So over the years I've had Animal Magnet, Animal Magic, Animal Party, like it just, and I hope I don't have to pick another one because I'm running out of names. It's tough. Doggy Diva is a great one. So what made you get into dog training in the first place, Dee?
I've been training dogs professionally for 7 years now. And as a little girl, I'm an only child. I grew up in Texas. And so my dogs, cats, birds, whatever, were my companions. And so I've always done dog training. I did my first pet trick contest when I was 5. And what made me convert into a professional dog trainer was kind of a combination of not really being sure what I wanted to do after I finished my undergraduate degree. I did a Bachelor of Science in Biology and Chemistry because I'm a science nerd. But I got commissioned through a lot of my volunteer work to help adopters with their new rescue dogs. And my claim to fame is working, you know, with dog-dog aggression. So it kind of just precipitated into a professional career. One morning I feel like I woke up and decided that I really should just pursue what I love. I was already good at it, and so I started my business, and that's pretty much how I got into the professional side, but it's always been a lifelong passion for me working with animals, and I think for me personally, the best part about doing professional dog training is working with the people. Dog trainers, the kind of joke is like we're the only teacher who teaches two species simultaneously, two different species simultaneously who are both beginners. So I like to take credit for that special talent. I'm teaching two novices.
Okay, so what was that trick? Way back when you were 5 years old, what was the trick?
What was the trick? Oh, my dog Babe is a border collie mix. She jumped onto a chair and shook hands. And it's nothing impressive now. My dogs do much more fancy stuff than that. But when you're five.
No, but you're five. That's awesome. Pretty good for a five-year-old. Yeah. Although picking a border collie is a bit of a ringer. I'd like to see you do that with a pug. But okay, so.
Now I can do that with a pug. When I was five, probably not.
Yeah, now? Well, I don't know. Pugs are awfully lazy. Jumping up on that chair? I'm not so sure. I don't know.
Fair.
I mean, you must find, like I do, that different dogs have different skills and ability to remember. So how do you deal with that when you've got a person who's a real high achiever and maybe they picked a dog that's not so engaged? How do you deal with that conflict?
Sure. You know, that's actually a really good question because I get asked that a lot by the students that I mentor. I serve as a mentor for a dog training program. And I'm always telling my dog trainer-to-be students that that's one of the hardest things is setting realistic expectations with clients. Because it's very often that we would meet humans who have maybe unrealistic or too high of expectations for the breed of dogs which they have, or even the opposite, which is like, you know, they have a Vishwa, like the supreme hunting dog who wants to hunt every lizard and stray cat known to man, and they want it to lay around like a greyhound on the sofa, you know. So I think it's definitely a challenge, and the best way to approach it is to really educate, you know, pet owners about, well, firstly, doing their research and breed based on their lifestyle and what they ultimately want to do with the dog as opposed to the dog that they love the most, the way it looks. And I think the trap that a lot of people fall into is that they want the smartest dog, but that can be detrimental if they don't really know what they're getting themselves into. So if I find clients already in that position, then I really try my best as a motivational coach, I guess, a doggy training coach, is to get my clients involved in canine sports or nose work or other activities to kind of cultivate the drive in their dog and show them how much fun it can be for them to do those activities with their dogs. And otherwise, they would have never even thought to do those sorts of things. So,
yeah, it's frustrating when you see a really, really bright dog bored out of his mind, misbehaving because he's just so bored and the people just want him to do nothing. And you think, well, why didn't you get a dog that does nothing, you know? And then you got the person who brings the dog that does nothing and they've got a book from the library and they want the dog to do every trick in the book.
Sure.
And the dog's looking at you like, help me, please. I need some chill out time. So some of this is personality and breed. But I think even with the laziest, simplest, hardest to train dog, there's still lots of tricks, right? There's still
absolutely.
Lots.
Absolutely. I think every breed, regardless, every age dog, temperament dog, every dog will excel at something. And so my job is to figure out what that something is and then really cultivate that, because you're absolutely right. Every dog, I get this question a lot. People say, well, what's the smartest breed? What's the dumbest breed? I go, there's no such thing. They all have different talents, and you just have to be able to figure out what they're good at and what they like doing. And a lot of people are really surprised at how much their English bulldog could learn or other breeds that you wouldn't think as being, you know, superstars jumping through hula hoops or that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, and you bring up a good point. Stan Korn is the author of that book, The Intelligence of Dogs, and he ranks them all. But he spends a huge amount of time, maybe half the book, telling you why each type of intelligence is different and you can't just go by the ranking. And then, of course, when it comes out, they just publish the top 10. And so Border Collie, Doberman, and Poodle come out in 1, 2, and 3 in every kind of test. Well, but you have to kind of look at that, too. Because some of the dogs, they're only good at one type of thing. Like they're clever at getting out of stuff, escaping, or they're clever at hunting, or they're great at commands and parlor tricks. You know, some of them have great memories. Some of them don't, right? Different mental skills. But those top three, the Dobie, the Poodle, and the Border Collie, they're good at absolutely everything. So if you've got one of those, you've got to give it something to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the sports and activities are endless. You know, even in a place like me, I'm here based in Miami, Florida. You know, we don't have open fields. I don't have a lake that I can take my dog to let him, you know, swim after ducks or duck dive or do any of that right here in Miami. But I think people need to really do their research and get involved with dog clubs and other things, because even in an urban jungle, somewhere like Miami, or I'm sure even like Chicago or other big cities, there's a lot to do.
Well, we'll be back in a minute to talk more with Dee the Doggy Diva about how to entertain and train your dog. Stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio. the doggy diva from Miami, and she was just saying, you know, in Miami, it's not so easy to find a lake or a pond. I'm really spoiled up here in Canada and British Columbia. Got a huge pond in my backyard. Got a big river running through the property. Lakes all around us. In fact, there's 10 lakes within a half an hour distance from my house and 4 within 10 minutes. So, yeah, my dogs are pretty spoiled. But if you live in an urban area, there's going to be doggy parks. There may even be, at the end of the season sometimes, there's swimming pools, public swimming pools. Right. That become doggy pools, you know,
yes.
Look into it. There's all kinds of great stuff, right, Dee?
Absolutely. You just have to look. And that's what I tell my doggy owners. You maybe find someone else who's really involved with their dog, you know, and even in an urban city, there's always things to do with your dog.
I find Facebook's really good for stuff like this. My kennel camp, Good Dogs on Facebook, if people want to see our new puppies, because we have 13 of them, two different litters, adorable puppies. But on Facebook, you can sort of pick your club, your area, the thing you're into, and it's pretty easy to find stuff. Dog owners, dog fanciers, they're pretty social people, and it's really fun at these events.
It is really fun. I actually recently just started in this last year competing in a lot of things with my dog. It was never, I've always trained dogs and I love doing it, but I never desired to compete for any titles. And then what I realized is just how much fun it is, you know, so I've recently gotten involved with competing in frisbee, obedience, agility, and we're having a good time. So I really do encourage people who think that, you know, to just try it because you never know what you're going to love doing with your dog.
What kind of dogs have you got? That's like, who's your frisbee competitor?
Should I even tell you? It's a border collie.
No, I love border collies.
Of course it is. No, actually, my youngest is a border collie, Marty McFly. He's 3.5 years old, and okay. He's my frisbee dude. And then my middle child is a yellow Labrador, who's my trick star. And then my oldest dog, who's a mutt, is my agility hound.
Nice. Okay, so mutts can do this too, you guys. You don't have to have a purebred dog to have fun with your dog. All these events are open to spayed and neutered dogs and mutts of all kinds. It's really not about a hoity sort of, you know, my dog's better than yours, I have papers kind of deal. It's about getting fun, and the people have such a good time. So I want to encourage you all to check stuff out. And if you're listening and you're a cat person, you're thinking, meow, that's not very fair, check out Agility. There's so much cat agility. You can do it in your own house with a couple of cardboard boxes. You can make some stuff that your cat will just love. And it's so cool to see them flying through a course after you train them. So cats can be trained too, people. But let's talk to Dee a little bit about some of her tougher clients. Okay, so here's one I face sometimes, Dee. I get the dog. The dog's, you know, doesn't come. Maybe he jumps up. Maybe he won't heel on leash. The usual kind of stuff. But he's real easy to train. The dog isn't the problem. You know, he comes here, maybe he comes for a lesson. Sometimes I do that. But sometimes the dog will come for a week if the people think he's really terrible. And I'll work on him all week. And then they come at the end and they do a lesson with me to learn what to do when they go home to get the same results.
Sure.
So, okay, in comes Mr. and Mrs. The dog's fine now. He's fantastic. Mr. and Mrs. can't stop fighting. And one of them will invariably pick me as their champion. Everything I say is right and everything I do is right. And the other one, no. The dog can't be trained. I don't believe this. I don't think you know what you're doing. And they end up fighting through the dog. Do you have this with some of your couples? Because I sure do.
You know what? I do. In various forms, I do. I think it's inevitable if you work with dogs and people long enough that you're going to have that couple where, like, maybe the husband's texting in the corner and he doesn't want to be involved. You know,
totally.
The wife is
or
really
he comes
into
it. In a suit and he says, oh, I can't go in there. I don't want to get dirty. And it's like, well, why did you come, buddy? You know?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely a conflict that you run into from time to time or just a disagreement. You know, you walk into a home and one of the partners really think something is a problem and the other one doesn't mind so much. And I think the problem with that is, as you know, too, you know, consistency is everything. So when you don't have everyone on board in the family, whether it's 2 people or 7, it can be really challenging. Even a dog that, like you said, maybe, you know, a trainer could spend, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks putting beautiful obedience on this dog and just give it 4 weeks and it's all gone without the consistency and the teamwork of those people in the household. you know, wanting to
minutes.
Do it right.
Honest to God, you'll have this dog trained so beautifully. He sees his owners and he's right back at it. He's like, I'm back to my old ways. You really have, like, I really have to do a lesson with them. Otherwise,
yes.
If I send that dog home, it's not like a TV that you fix and you send it back and it works. It's more like a kid that's not doing his homework. If I send him back home, he's not going to do his homework at home again unless I teach his parents how to get him motivated to do it. It's that kind of a thing. So, yeah, I've got to show the dog and the people that he can heal, that he can come. And I'm also showing the dog that these people expect it and reward it, because usually they're not, right?
Right. Well, and it's interesting what you say about how you got to show the people that the dog can do it, because I feel like for a lot of people who might be at their wit's end, or they really just don't have a lot of faith in their own training abilities or the dog's abilities, it's so important sometimes for them to see what the dog is capable of to get them on board, to train the dog, and to be an active participant when they can really see their animal being a rock star and the way that it works with you or me or whomever, you know, has worked with that animal.
Yeah, sometimes it's really nice to show them, look at what your dog does for me. Okay, now your turn. And you hand the leash over. And it's like a total pandemonium, right? But then you show them what to do, and it doesn't take long. So you like the people part of this. See, I really like the dog part of it. I don't love the people part as much as you seem to. Sometimes I do. Sometimes
part.
I get a great, loving family with kids who are gentle and kind, and it's all great. But not always. Usually if they call me, there's something really wrong, you know? Somebody's really off the mark on how they're treating the dog, right?
Sure. Right. And, you know, I actually have a family right now. They have one son who's like college age, but the four girls are at home. And so it's four daughters and then the husband and the wife. And I'm having so much fun with this family because they each have a job with the dog. And when I come for the lesson every week, they're prepared and they've all done their assignment. And I'm like, where's the magic dust that someone put on you guys? Because you are the perfect. You're the reason I love dog training. Everyone just works together and they have so much fun with the puppy. Of course, it's a black lab puppy, so
it's easy to train and wants to please. But you know what? Like, I've had lessons where I show up, I drive all the way there, everything's queued up and everything. I show up and nobody's there. I'm sitting there with the nanny or the cleaning lady waiting for the dog to come home even. I mean, it's not always like you just said.
Not always, but sometimes. And I think for me, that's what makes it so rewarding. You know, training dogs from an early age, I'm a positive faith trainer because I couldn't have possibly used, let's say, a prong collar when I was five. Like, in reality, you can't. Either, you know, when you're that little and you're playing with your dog, you have no concept of force-based training. You really don't. You're just having a good time. You know, so that's
you know
really what?
I find people do use it in those situations. They use it when there's a power imbalance, and they shouldn't. Prong collar should never be on puppies. I don't think they should be on any dogs. I look at people, and they're sitting in their car. Just yesterday, I was at a stoplight. This guy had a big pit bull beside him, and he's loving it up, and he's hugging it and everything. You can see he just adores this dog. But it's got a prong collar on it.
Right.
And I'm thinking, if you love that dog, train it so you don't need to cause it pain to be polite around you.
Exactly.
I mean, really, he should be watching your back. He should be healing up with you without you even trying. So we're going to come back one more segment with Dee, the doggy diva, and we're going to talk about the number one reason people call you.
Awesome.
I'm guessing. Well, you specialize in aggression, so that tips it. If you didn't specialize in aggression, I would say it would either be dog won't come or dog goes poo-poo, pee-pee in the house. If you were into the toy breeds, that would probably be the problem. And that's what I thought you were going to say when you talked about those four girls. I thought, no, they got a multi-poo and it won't get house trained because they're all babying it. But no, you've got kids who are working hard. So we only have a little bit of time left before we go to the break here. We're going to come back and find out what's the number one reason people call the doggy diva in Miami. Stay tuned to All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love you,
and, I love you.
And you know that I need you too.
I'm hungry, can't wait, I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait, I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry.
Is your dog or cat a finicky eater due to health problems, old age, or just fussiness? Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet will boost your pet's appetite and nutrition for less than 40 cents a day. If you are adding expensive canned food to kibble to get your pet to eat, Super Gravy is the earth-friendly alternative with no canned waste and for less than half the cost. Visit supergravy.com for more info and bring pure joy back to your companion's mealtime. Save 20% now at supergravy.com. Just enter radio at checkout. Try Super Gravy by Clear Conscience Pet. Your pet will love you for it.
I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food. I'm hungry, can't wait. I'm hungry, lick the plate. I'm hungry, tastes great, I love food.
Scratch it.
Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo look it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426. Or on the web, www.healthygoo.com. Goo spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Hello, we're back with Dee, the Doggy Diva from Miami. And, okay, Dee, what's the number one reason people call you?
Leash pulling.
Leash pulling! Oh, my goodness.
Leash pulling.
Wow, that can be fixed in literally one day. Like,
yep,
that's just
in
crazy.
One day, one session, people don't believe me, but it really is one of the easiest things to train your dog how to do. And I attribute all the leash pulling clients, at least here in my area, to being city dogs, because I think in other places where dogs, you have a field where you can go. Like you were saying, that wonderful path by your house, that trail. A lot of people in cities aren't exercising their dogs enough. And so it's no wonder why they get out and they're just like charged, like ready to go. So I'll meet someone
and they'll say, you know, I've had this dog for 6 years and he just won't heal. And I think, 6 years? You've let him pull you around for every day,
twice, three times a day?
I mean,
right,
oh my,
tired.
Like, why did you do that? And then I point out, you know, this dog, sometimes it's a golden or a lab. And I say, you know, this dog could be a seeing eye dog. That's how smart he is. He could walk for you and heal with you if you were blind. How come you can't manage this? Like, you know, and then you show them how quickly. I mean, okay, tell us, tell everybody what you would do with a dog like this. The dog's pulling. He's lunging. So you recommend first that they start getting him out to off-leash parks or run with him. Get him
exercise. Yeah, he definitely needs exercise.
Yeah, and so a tired dog. So you start with a tired dog. But then what?
My leash training protocol is kind of a two-pronged attack, because I think that it's not realistic for owners to want to practice good leash skills with their dog when they're tired and they've had a long day or whatever. So we obviously are going to teach the dog to heal by a series of, you know, fast-paced walking, turning into the dog, rewarding eye contact, cookies, luring the dog, all those kinds of wonderful things to teach them a nice heel, stopping, not letting the dog pull us. But I also, with all of my leash pulling clients, I have to implement and I'd love to implement a pull management collar or harness. So whether that be a gentle leader or a sensation harness, an easy walk harness, something that will enable them to have control of their dog and reinforce good behavior when the human just doesn't really feel like training, because that's the reality. And I think, you know, good dog trainers have to know their clients' limitations. And if I just worked a 10-hour shift at the hospital, I am so not for coming home and teaching my dog good leash skills. I just want to take him out. So
well,
you've got to be able to.
The fact that they're coming to you is already telling you that, because if they were the type of people that would insist the dog be polite, it would be, but they've been putting up with it because they're too exhausted or they want so much to have a nice walk. They'd rather not argue about it. So they give in and the dog learns, you know what? If I pull, we go faster. If I pull, we go to the park. He doesn't even realize that he'd still get to go to the park if he didn't pull. It's just become a habit now.
So first thing first is you've got to be able to give the owners immediate control and release. And I love gentle leaders. I swear by gentle leaders, unless, you know, you have a breed that just can't wear one because of their face or it's too close to the eyes or whatever it might be. And then I'll switch over. Then in that case, I'll go to something like a front clip harness, which I love. And I think getting relief from some of the leash pulling is a huge step in the right direction to actually have your dog properly leash trained so you can walk them just on a martingale or a flat collar.
Now, when you put a gentle leader on a really bossy, dominant dog, and it immediately tries to take it off, okay, this is a problem I have with some people because I can't get them to keep walking. They stop and they stare at the dog and they get upset, and then they sort of empathize and they think, oh, he hates it. I can't do this to him. And so we need to try something else. What do you do to convince them that, hey, you know what? This is part, the reason he doesn't want this is because he doesn't want to respect you. It's not hurting him. And, you know, how do you get over that?
Every time I put a gentle leader on a dog, I'll say something to the extent of, okay, one of three things are about to happen, so I need you to be prepared. It's normal, and everyone's dog goes through it, and this is the tough love part, so bear with me. The dog's either going to sit down and lay down and not want to do anything because they're so upset they can't drag you anymore. They're either going to they're either going to do the crazy mouth, which is where they open their mouth really wide, and they think that somehow that's going to magically take the gentle leader off their face, and they just get this nutso expression, pawing frantically, whatever. Or number three, my favorite here in Florida, the alligator roll. Let's drop to the ground and roll as fast as you can in hopes that somehow that's going to shake off the collar. So I think when you set the expectations for the client of what the dog's going to do, they won't panic as much. And then in 10 minutes, it's over, you know, because I've learned through just experience and helping my clients that I love you, you know, Premier Pet Products and Gentle Leader, but I'm not going to take 2 weeks to desensitize my dog to the head collar. I'm just not going to do it. I need a tool that's going to work for my clients immediately, and we're going to go out. So tough luck, puppy. That's just the way it's going to be.
Well, and with all of these things, I find it helps to tell the people that, you know what, this is just for training. Once your dog is good, you can just have this in your pocket. If your dog is acting up one day, you put it on. You can walk on any collar, no collar, no leash.
No collar.
If your dog's that good. But this can just be a training tool. And the way you do that is you use whatever it is you need. And then when the dog's behaving well, you unclip from that, clip onto his regular collar. As long as he's behaving, that's the privilege, right?
Sure.
And it's so quick. The dog figures it out so fast. If I pull, I get the training collar. If I don't pull, I'm okay. Right?
Exactly. And what's awesome about the gentle leader, head collars in general, is that the little snoot loop actually slides off. And before you don't even have to clip to a normal collar. You have a regular collar if you just kind of, you know what I'm talking about. You slide the little strap over the nose. So it's a great transition. You're absolutely right.
And some people will want to use choke collars. There's a kind of collar that has just a little bit of a choke inside a regular collar, and that's what I recommend. And then you can switch back and forth really easily from using the choke, which doesn't actually choke the dog. You set it up properly, so it just means it's tight and fitted when he needs a correction, and loose and comfortable when he's behaving himself. This is how you guide him. But mostly, if you see me teaching a dog to heel, and you can see me on YouTube for free, if you see me teaching a dog to heel, you'll see me almost never, I hardly ever do the jerk and the tug, and you'll see me moving a lot and reminding him to heel. It's basically a challenge. Match my steps if you can, dog. I dare you. Match my steps, because I'm doing something fun. See if you can do it. And before long, the dog's into it. He wants to be in the right position.
Totally.
He's proud of it. He's looking up at me, and he's all happy. And then I can go really slow or really fast or backwards, and the dog's like, right on. Now, heel isn't just slow down and him yelling speed up. Now, heel means something. But I want to just emphasize to people, if you are having a dog that pulls you to the park, pulls you somewhere, anywhere, regularly, you got to insist that that doesn't happen anymore.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, if you decide you don't care about the park, right? If the dog cares about the park and he wants a park, every time he pulls, go the other way until he's respectful. Because don't let him pull you to the park. Right,
Dee?
Wouldn't you agree?
You got it. giving in, no caving.
Okay, well, what would the best advice you could give for house training be? We only have about a minute and a half left, so I want to make sure we cover this before the end of the segment.
Best advice for house training is you have to own up to the fact that in order to properly house train your dog, you must be present. You must be alert. Yeah. You know, supervision is the number one thing, and house training is the easiest thing to do conceptually and the hardest thing to do if your mind's going to be somewhere else. So my secret is if you can't watch the dog during house training, tie him to you. It's not a big deal. Get a little lightweight cord from a hardware store. get yourself a little clip, make yourself a little 10-foot drag line inside, and that way you can even supervise the dog when you can't have your eyes directly on the dog. That resolves most of people's problems and will keep the house training on track.
That's a great idea, and it works really well with rescue dogs who are maybe too old to kennel train. You know, maybe you don't want to stick them in a kennel and have them have issues when they've already been mistreated in a bin.
Sure.
You want them to get used to you. So, yeah, tie them to you, because when they get up and start to wander around as you're sitting on the computer or doing your work, you know they need to go.
Second.
You walk out with them, right?
Yep, and it's that 1 second where you're on Facebook. You're on Facebook and your dog is in the other room. Oops, your fault.
Okay, guys, so how do they reach you, the Doggy Diva? We've only got a few seconds left. How do they reach you online?
You can visit my website at applauseyourpaws.com or follow me on Twitter at Doggy Diva, DoggyDeeVa.
Right on. Well, thank you very much, Doggy Diva. It's been great talking to you.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, lucky people in Miami, you've got Dee the Doggy Diva to go to with your doggy problems. And we've enjoyed her today on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We'll be back to talk about hotels. That's right, on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf.
And anytime you're near,
disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Get in on the fun and the rewards of caring for animals as a professional. Train to be a pet groomer or a veterinary assistant at the Florida Institute of Animal Arts. Turn your love for animals into a lifelong career. There are thousands of jobs in the growing professions of pet groomer and veterinary assistant. We help place graduates. Ask about tuition financing. The Florida Institute of Animal Arts, Winter Park, 407-869-PETS. On the web at myfiaa.com.
Hello, you're back on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and I'm going to be talking with Lisa Porter about Pet Hotels of America. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Well, thank you, Deb. Thank you for having me.
So what is Pet Hotels of America? I've never heard of you. What is it?
Pet Hotels of America, it's a one-stop travel planning website for people that own pets. So basically, if you're traveling with pets, you can find a complete listing of about 25,000 pet-friendly hotels, and they've all been verified, so, you know, there's no need to worry. And most of them offer pet perks as well as people perks, like free breakfast or free Wi-Fi, you know, discounted rates or free parking. But a lot of these hotels also offer little packages for pets because, you know, that's part of their selling point. So we have those. And then we also have pet-friendly vacation homes, cabins, cottages, and B&Bs. But what I think separates us from other websites where you can go and book a pet-friendly room is we found that people traveling with pets want more than just a place to stay. They want to figure out, once they get to their destination, what are they going to do? And so that's why we added on to our site. It started out where it was just pet hotels. And So we started, once we got going, we realized that we needed to add hiking trails and pet-friendly beaches, pet-friendly restaurants, vineyards, wineries, gardens, historic sites, basically everything anybody's going to need in any U.S. city throughout the U.S. if they're traveling with their pets.
Are these things...
Then,
like,
if they're not...
Are these examples you're giving, you know, would the wine tour be something the pet would be allowed to be brought along for? Is that what you're saying? Or no,
yes.
Just other things they can do while they're touring?
No, these are things, everything that we have listed on our site is something they can bring their pet along for.
Dogs would love the tour of a winery. Why not? It's a beautiful walk in an orchard. Why not?
Oh, absolutely. And more wineries are opening their doors to pets, which is really cool.
I hope people doing this are bringing their best manners and their poop scooper bags and are not making it hard for the rest of us to come after, because you've really got to be respectful when they're opening their doors to nice places like this, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I talked to the people over at the hotels, and for the most part, their dog guests are pretty well-mannered, and that absolutely is a mandatory requirement. But for the most part, they, you know, really, dogs are well-behaved. If they're travelers, it's just like people, you know, they learn the ropes and follow along with it, and it's up to the owners to make sure that they, you know, take care of their dogs as well. So
I'm surprised you have that many hotels. I remember, because I used to do dog tours, so I would be giving a show every night in a different city, and there'd be these bad dogs there for me to train, and I'd bring one or two dogs of my own to show some fancy tricks and things, and I would go around the country doing this. So I had to find hotels, and there were only a couple of chains I could rely on, and usually there were only a couple of rooms they would designate to the dog people, and I always brought a ton of flea spray. I would not unload my suitcases. I would take only what I needed in and out, because these rooms were infested, you know, and I would have to spray my animals and have them on other preventative measures ahead of time and this kind of thing for the dogs I was bringing with me. It was a bit of an ordeal, and I was really constricted about where I could go, and I certainly wouldn't have left the dogs alone in the room, even with a kennel, because it really just wasn't catering to us back then. Is it different now?
Oh, totally different. We have 1,300 hotel chains on our website, and that goes all the way from the Lowe's to Kimpton Hotels to Hyatt's, Omni. There's a lot of little smaller boutique hotels that are really cool, destinations. Well, they're not really boutique, but they're smaller chains, but we do have boutiques as well. You know, these are high-rated hotels. We have 2, 3, 4, 5-star hotels. And on the website, you know, if you go to Pet Hotels of America, you'll be able to see how they're all rated and, you know, what their star rating is, what people have said about them, their pet policies, everything and anything you would possibly want to know about that particular hotel, you know, from the amenities to the pet perks.
Okay,
so the real lavish ones,
the really fancy hotels, the really high-end ones that go out of their way for pets, what kind of things are we looking at? What are they doing? Because I bet you it's pretty outrageous. What are they giving our pets as the perk?
Well, there's some hotels that'll put your dog's photo in the hotel room, so you send it before you leave, so it's there when you get there. The Hyatt has, in some of their hotels, you know, a lot of their hotels, they have what's called the Hyatt Gold Passport, where they get a little welcome kit with the dog's name, birthday information, owner information. They have all that stuff. We were over at the Hyatt Century Plaza in Los Angeles and talking to the chef, and this chef goes so far out to make sure that the pets get handmade treats using eggs and using different kinds of ingredients that's going to make their coat shiny. It's really neat. They're just as important as, you know, the people. And those are my dogs barking.
Yeah, what kind of dogs have you got there in the background?
I have a King Charles and a Chihuahua.
Oh, my goodness, little dogs trying to sound bigger. That must be the King Charles.
Little dogs sound bigger. little dogs always sound bigger, and I'll tell you, and these ones really like to have fun when, you know, we get new guests at the door and things like that. So, sorry
have
about that.
Oh, no, that's fine. On pet radio, it's okay. On All Paws Pet Talk Radio, it's okay to have dogs barking. Have you taken them anywhere? Have you ever taken them to a hotel, your little ones, your little yappers?
Oh, my God, yes. When Zoe, my King Charles, was a baby, I remember taking her into a hotel in Palm Springs, and I had her in a crate, and I was sneaking her in. And I'm sure that most pet owners probably have done this, so I don't feel so guilty. But, you know, the hard thing is getting
to
the lobby.
Oh, no, officer, that's not my dog. He's just following me here through this park. I don't know who that dog is. Yeah, right. I've done this in all kinds of situations. No, no, that's not my dog. No. Yeah, I get it.
Then you throw the cover over the crate so that nobody can see, but they can hear the bark. Nope, not mine.
Well, what do you do about that? If your dogs bark like that when the elevator goes or people walk by the door, I mean, do you have to be there the whole time just telling them to quiet? Or are your dogs hotel trained?
Well, you know what? Most dogs are pretty hotel trained in the first place, and a lot of the hotels you really can't hear. And they get used to the walking back and forth just like they do, you know, at home. So most dogs are, you know, after the first time, they're pretty good about it. And the hotels that the dogs that get really unruly, you know, the thing is if a lot of people decide that, hey, hotels aren't my thing, let's go to a B&B or let's go to a vacation home. And we have those listed as well, you know, specifically, you know, that are pet friendly. So people have a choice now, which is really, really good.
Well, we're going to come back after the break and talk a little more about how pet traveling's changed in the last 5 years. And we're going to get some tips, some rules of thumb to travel with, because why not? We're talking about Pet Hotels of America. And while we're on our break, you may as well check it out online. Check it out. And you'll see 1,300 hotels and so much more. Places that you won't have to sneak your dog into and make him shut up.
Restaurants.
Because he'll be welcome. Okay, everybody.
Well, I was just going to add, you know, the other thing that we have here, just I know that people that travel, you know, get where they need to find other things besides the hotel. And we have all the pet-friendly restaurants, pet-friendly parks, beaches, veterinarians, groomers, kennels,
okay,
everything.
Okay, so we'll be back we'll be back to talk more about that on All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
Pet Talk Radio with Deb Wolf, your host. And today we're talking with Lisa Porter from Pet Hotels of America. Now, I've taken some vacations, as I was saying, with my pets. And sometimes the drawback is if you can't take them with you and you don't want to leave them alone in a hotel room, well, what do you do, right? Like, it's super hot. What if you're in Vegas or Florida? You can't leave your pet in an air-conditioned car, you know? So you need to find out what can you do once you get there. Do you really have to only eat takeout crappy food in your hotel room because you have a dog along? Or are there restaurants you just don't know about that welcome your dog? And that's what you can find out at Pet Hotels of America, right, Lisa?
Yes, you can. you don't even have to eat bad food anywhere. Yeah. More and more restaurants, first of all, are opening their doors, so it's really cool if they have a patio. So, and we have listings of all the pet-friendly restaurants in every city in the U.S., and no, you don't have to leave them alone in the hotel room, because we also have listings of pet sitters. And you know, I mean, there's, when you're traveling with a pet, the, you know, what makes it a little bit difficult is there are going to be times when you want to go someplace without your pet, you know, a museum that won't allow them, a, you know, fine dining restaurant, something like that, which is why the pet sitters category on our page really comes in handy, because you can go into any city, you can find a pet sitter nearby, drop them off, pick them up, or have them, you know, come to the hotel, pick them, you know, pick them up and walk them and, you know, just drop them back off. And so, no, you don't have to do that anymore. We have listings on Pet Hotels of America for restaurants, for historic sites, tours, gardens, in all different kinds of attractions, interesting places.
Because, you know what, on any vacation you can think of, there's going to be moments. You're on the beach, and it's a dog-friendly beach, and you think, oh, I wish my dog was here. But there's also going to be moments, like when Aunt Ethel's big birthday party happens, her 65th, at the country club, where you're going to think, uh-oh, what am I going to do with the dog? Right? It just doesn't work that you have a totally dog-friendly vacation most of the time.
No, it doesn't work at home. You know, it doesn't work at home, so it's not going to work on the road. So you really need to have some extra resources available, which is why, you know, you can just find a kennel or a pet sitter. Even the pet hotels, you know, are around, and they're basically in every U.S. city. So you just have to, you know, go through, type in the city name, and you'll see our listings, and that will really help. And it's got all the ratings and everything. So call them, ask the questions that you need to ask, you know, make sure that, you know, ask if they have an outdoor run, ask, you know, how many people are there, if it's 24/7 service, you know, that sort of thing that you would normally ask a pet sitter or, you know, a kennel, whatever, to make sure that it's a place that you would like to leave your pet. But, you know, they're getting better and better and better by the minute anyway, because everybody's vying for your business. So, you know
just, I think back to a time before, like when my mom was growing up, she said there used to be dogs in all the shops in Canada. And I remember when I was, maybe 20, 30 years ago, traveling around Europe, there were dogs in bars and restaurants, and it seemed like every shop, especially in France, every truck driver, taxi driver, there were dogs everywhere, little wee dogs with attitude who were really well-behaved, who went everywhere off-leash and followed their owners, all over Europe. Okay, I didn't find that in America. Is America becoming more pet-friendly, do you think?
Yes. Actually, America is considered one of the most pet-friendly countries that there are. It's the hotels, nearly 5% of the hotels are pet-friendly, and that's totally on the rise. And when I mean pet-friendly, it's not just, yes, we accept your pets, but, yes, you know, we're going to offer you a bed. We're going to offer you, you know, food and bowls. And, you know, a lot of them go over the top to cater to the pets, you know, giving them, you know, special homemade treats. They'll have little walking areas for your pet. So hotels, absolutely. Restaurants, more and more, are opening their doors to pets. You know, as long as they have a patio, because of, you know, our rules and regulations, that dogs aren't allowed inside the restaurant, if they have a patio, most likely they are going to allow pets. Boat tours now allow pets.
Oh, dogs love a good boat ride with the wind and the smell.
I know.
A lot of dogs love a good boat ride. But you should have a life jacket in case, especially if you're on a small boat and your dog gets knocked over and he's unconscious. You want him to float. No, I'm serious. And they have a hook on him. Okay, so what are some rules of thumb to travel with? What should we leave people with before the segment ends here?
Okay, one of the most important things you can do, there's a few important things. One is you need to visit your veterinarian prior to any extended trip to make sure that all your vaccinations are up to date, because when you go to get on a plane, chances are you are going to need those. When you go to, if you're going to leave your dog at a hotel or a pet hotel or you know, or even bring them into a hotel, you're going to need those. You also want to keep a copy of the shot records and health certificates with you because, you know, like you want them easy to access. Let's put it that way. You also want to bring a couple of photos of your pet to and write your name's your pet's name and your contact information on the back. If something should happen where you get separated, you just pass them out real quick, and the people right there can look for your pet. And it just makes it simple. It's just good common sense. You want to travel with some of your dog's regular food. Put a little bit, you know, in a bunch of Ziploc bags and keep them with you until your dog gets acclimated to the food wherever you are staying. If your pet is on any medication, make sure you have enough for your entire trip. And also, you want to throw in a little bit extra just in case your flight is delayed or whatever. Booking online, you always, and even by phone, you always, I don't care whether it is an airline or a hotel room, always call a day or two beforehand and tell them, remind them you will be arriving with your pet. That's really important. And another important thing is to make sure that you plan early because, like on Pet Hotels of America, we have a lot of special deals going on, and if you plan early, you're going to be in there for the holidays or, you know, whatever, you're just going to get a better deal that way. And we also suggest that you go on the site and map where you're going to go, like where the pet-friendly parks are, the beaches, the restaurants that are going to be near the hotel that you're staying at, so that you have these, so that you don't have to spend your vacation time dealing with all this stuff that, you know, the planning part of it, which should have been done at home. That's
really important. I think also you need to have some good tags and ID on your pets. Tattoo is good, yeah. Microchip is good, but a really good dog tag. I can't tell you how many times I've found a lost dog somewhere, called the number, and the number's not in service. What good does that do?
I know. Yeah. No, that is that's a must do. And, you know, and there's websites out there that you can, you know, put your information on your pet so it can be accessed from anywhere, which is really cool. And, you know, so that's one way to go, too. So, yes, tags, without a doubt, those are really important. And learn about your airlines before you book. Make sure that you know what your airline's pet policies are. Some of the airlines won't even let you book during the holidays or travel with the pet during the holidays, so you have to watch out. You know, the airlines are pretty sticky, so... You know, make sure you know your pet policies.
And you know what? There's seasonal rules, too. There are certain parts of the world that are so hot in summer, they will not allow dogs to be flown or pets to be flown at certain times of the year. So if you're going to Las Vegas in July, that may not be an option for your dog, right? Or Arizona,
right.
You know,
right.
Because December is fine. But you got to think about it. So it's good to know all these things in advance. Make sure your dog's up to date on rabies in particular, because that's going to be the one where they say, you're not allowed into our state unless I see your rabies tag. And you don't want to over-vaccinate your dog just because you didn't bring the papers with you. But if you don't have the paper, they're going to assume your dog could be carrying rabies. Not cool. So you have to have the paper.
Yeah, and
so
it's good protection for all the dogs, you know. I mean,
it's like
humans being vaccinated.
And if something happens to you while you're away, or if your plan is to go on a cruise, you know, say you go on a cruise and you're traveling with your dog all the way there, and then you go on the cruise. Well, the dog has to be boarded at a kennel when you're on a cruise. You need your papers for that. And all that stuff you can figure out at Pet Hotels of America. So can you give out the website for people?
Sure. It's www.pethotels.com. So it's
right
www.pethotels.com.
Okay. Okay, thanks, everybody. Until next week, thank you, Lisa Porter. Be good to your animals from All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
And anytime you're near.